Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to From the Touchline in Seattle. Todd Stauber here. I'm sitting with Aaron Heinzen.
Yes.
And he's here. He's here and he sounds good. Sounds good. What a week in soccer it's been. We're going to give you as much as we can here in the next hour. We've got a lot to talk about. Got a couple guests coming on the show at 9:30. We've got Colin Rigby, former Seattle Sounder USL player, coming on to talk Jordan Morris because he coached him, Heinzen. He coached him in high school.
Fantastic experience.
It is a great experience. We'll get some great insight from him on Jordan Morris, USA scorer against Mexico, scored in his first start for the USA. Just a great moment for Jordan Morris and you know, a Seattle boy, great moment for soccer here in Seattle.
Absolutely.
At 9:45, we'll bring on Roger Levesque to talk about MLS. Also to talk about his Stanford experience. A lot of talk about Jordan Morris leaving Stanford and people wanting him to leave Stanford. We'll get a perspective from a professional player who did stay, finished his degree, ended up having a great career. Obviously, Roger Levesque did. So looking forward to having those two guys on the show, Heinzo. But we have other things to get to before them. We got a lot to get to here. We are going to go straight into the Champions League because we had some unbelievable matches, a couple surprises, and a couple just fantastic world-class goals, Heinzo.
Classic Champions League, especially this time of year. You know, the Barcelona game, Paris Saint-Germain, you know, we kind of expected a bit more from them. I mean, I'll let you start out which top game we want to start at. But
well, you're going to give me the option, and I really appreciate that. Let's start off. Let's go Tuesday first. Let's just go in chronological order. And let's go Juventus-Monaco. It really – I would say if you were looking at all of the games, this was the one game where maybe it wasn't going to be as interesting to just as you're looking at it. But it ended up being a good game. When I went back and watched this game, Monaco, even though they ended up losing 1-0 on a 57-minute penalty from Arturo Vidal, Monaco played well. I thought Monaco showed very well. And I think this is going to be an interesting game going Monaco for the second leg next Wednesday. Early in the game, Tevez was dangerous. And, you know, there was a couple, both sides threatened there through the first half. Monaco threatened first in the second half, but just 12 minutes after the break, it was, you know, the Monaco's arguing, saying it wasn't a penalty, but Ricardo Carvalho, he caught him. I think he caught him at the top of the box. I think it was definitely a penalty. What do you think on that play, Heinzo?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a penalty. And there's, I mean, Monaco, of course, are going to argue it, but there's not much you could say. It's good work. I think it's well-deserved for Juventus. They showed well. It's at their place. But 1-0, I mean, the best thing that came out of that game, obviously, was Monaco. They didn't allow them to score, so that's huge for Juventus. But it's going to be a much tougher game than we thought. It's good to see Pirlo back. They're still missing Paul Pogba, which is a big blow to Juventus. But I think for me right now, you know, the Juventus has the best chance of obviously getting through. They're the team to do it. But Monaco, who I thought would be completely played off the park, were not whatsoever. It's a very experienced team.
Yeah. No, I mean, so when you look at it, yeah, I mean, Monaco, I mean, the French league is not a terrible league. You know, I think that they – I mean, I think that even I underestimated Monaco. When I went back to watch the game, I was thinking – typical Juve, you know, Italian, they get a goal and then they just build the fort and sit in, which they did. Once they scored, they brought Pirlo off and they built the Italian wall, which couldn't be penetrated. But I think it's going to be interesting going back. I think it is unfortunate Pogba's not involved in this. Is he going to be back for next week or he'll still be out?
Yeah, I think he'll still be out. He's going to be out for 2 months. And that was back against Dortmund.
So yeah, okay.
Out for now.
So he'll be out, but it should be a good game going back to Juventus.
Some positives, though, real quick. Carrasco for Monaco is fantastic. That guy is so quick on the striker.
Yeah.
He threatened Berbatov, obviously a threat. So
Berbatov came on, though, a little surprise he didn't start. You know, not that he was going to run a lot either way. but I was a little surprised that he came off the bench. But we'll see. We'll see how he's played in the second leg going back to Monaco. But, you know, I obviously, Monaco has done well to get to this point. I think anything they get at this point, is obviously going to be icing on the cake for them because nobody even expected them to get this far. But I thought they showed very well, and I think that's going to be a good game going back to Monaco.
No question, definitely one of the more competitive ones.
Yeah. Talk about competitive and talk about a match with just so much emotion in it. The Atletico Real match, you know, I just enjoyed watching it. I mean, there's not very many 0-0 games you can look at and say it literally had everything in that match except for a goal.
Yeah. Both teams, obviously Real Madrid, not many stadiums they come into where they're feeling a little, their confidence is lacking. I mean, they haven't scored there in a long time. Atletico have had their number all season. The last time they played, they were annihilated by Atletico Madrid. So Diego Simeone knows what he's doing. Now they have to go back. Real Madrid had a couple chances, but Atletico were all over them at times. And
yeah,
it is very competitive. And that's the one I'm looking forward to the most, Atletico versus Real.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game. And I mean, in this match, you had Gareth Bale with a really early chance. He was denied by Jan Oblak, who was just brilliant on the day. I mean, he realistically kept Atletico in this tie. 22-year-old Slovenian had two real sensational first half saves that really kept them in.
Yeah,
but you saw Atletico almost took the lead just before a half. Sergio Ramos gifted possession to Griezmann, and it wasn't the last time he would do that on the night. Griezmann wasn't able to finish that chance, but I thought Sergio Ramos struggled. I thought he gave the ball away continually, which, as you know, I don't really have much love for him, so it warmed my heart to see him doing that. But in the second half, you saw the Mario Mandzukic, I'm losing my mind show. An elbow from Ramos, he's bleeding everywhere. I mean, I think his brain slipped out when he was bleeding. It was unbelievable. He lost his mind. I mean, he got a yellow card for literally doing nothing when he came back on the field. I think the referee was just trying to calm him down because he would have been sent off, no question. You could just see he had lost his mind. Yeah. He had lost the plot completely.
But you could see what was interesting too, I thought, was you're right. When he came back on, the referee gives him a yellow card for absolutely no reason, which I'm not sure is legal. But
yeah.
So he comes on, gets this yellow card. But what was interesting is I thought, oh, for sure, instantly he's going to be taken off, Simeone.
No.
Simeone's going to take him off. Doesn't take him off. And you could see that Real Madrid were expecting the same thing, too. Like, Sergio Ramos was like, when is this crazy guy going to come off the field? He never does.
Well, he pulled everybody else except for him.
That was a great move. It's a great tactical move. He was unsettling everybody. Carvalho eventually was taken off.
Yes, he was.
Carvalho, however, his last game, the right back for Real Madrid, eventually replaced by Arbeloa.
Yes.
He'd gotten him into it.
Right, so exactly. And you also had Fernando Torres come on, and I thought for sure Torres is coming on for Mandzukic. No, not the case.
Not at all.
He's coming on. It was hilarious, but it takes a psychopath, which Diego Simeone is, to understand the psychopath that Mandzukic had become in that second half.
Yeah,
I mean, it was unbelievable. But I'll tell you what, it just sets up a fantastic game at the Bernabeu on Wednesday where Atletico have won. In their last three games there, they've won once and drawn twice. And I think that it just sets up just an unbelievable game coming on Wednesday. I just can't wait for this match.
Yeah. Danny Carvalho.
Danny Carvalho. Yeah. Well, he had got into it. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, I have trouble saying Mandzukic multiple times. I mean, I don't know why I can't say that name, but I just can't say it. But what a great match. It really, I just can't wait for the second leg of this. And I think it's going to be a great one.
It'll also be interesting, too, because Marcelo got suspended. So he got his next yellow card. So he is out for the leg next week. So we'll see if Contrao can do something different on the left there for Real Madrid. It was a big loss. Marcelo is unbelievable. How that ball he took out of the air.
No, he played very well.
He's a threat. He's dangerous going forward. And he's one of the more experienced players for Real Madrid. So
yeah, I think that will be a loss. You're listening to From the Touchline in Seattle. I'm Todd Stauber. He is Aaron Hines, and we're on the Back Sports Page Radio Network and Blog Talk Radio. You can call in guests, 760-283-0846. We're also on Twitter at FTTL in Seattle is our handle. We're picking up some followers on Twitter, Heinzo.
Oh,
it's
fun.
Also, just want to mention, we don't have any official sponsors, but we are brought to you by La Reve, French bakery on top of Queen Anne.
Yeah.
Serving us crack cocaine in their coffee every morning to get us fired up. But great little spot on top of Queen Anne. Hope those beautiful girls down there are listening in. Just fantastic. They treat us so well down
there.
Thanks,
the ref.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. Moving on to Wednesday, a couple more fantastic games, Heinzo. We're going to start Barcelona-PSG. It was never really going to be the match it should have been with PSG missing Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Also, Thiago Motta.
Yeah.
And also,
Marco Verratti.
Yeah, Marco Verratti. Huge losses. And then it didn't help when Thiago Silva just walked off the pitch 15 minutes into the opening game.
Yeah.
Into the opening half. Maybe Thiago Silva was seeing something similar to what he saw in, coming in, what he saw in the World Cup from Germany. Maybe he thought he didn't want to go live through that again. So he just walked out. He was looking and going, there's Messi, there's Neymar, and there's Suarez. I'm just going to get out of here before this happens to me again. He walked off the pitch. I might have done the same, to be honest. But yeah. I wouldn't want to be staring at those three and how brilliant those three were in this match, those three up top. First goal came in the 18 minutes in. Iniesta and Messi combined quickly through the midfield. Messi slipped Neymar in, opened up with his right foot to the far post. Great opening goal. But just the pace at which they attacked and got forward there was just unbelievable. And he just showed how dangerous those three can be when they're linking up to with each other.
Yeah, especially, I mean, you know, it's funny you say it's rare to see Messi play a game and not get a goal, but it wasn't his night to score tonight. And then, you know, Neymar and Luis Suarez picking up the slack, no problem. Luis Suarez was absolutely unbelievable. Of course, Barcelona with a little injury to Andres Iniesta, which sounds like he's going to be just fine. But then you have Xavi comes right in.
Hey, that's okay. We'll just bring Xavi in. That's okay.
No loss.
Yeah, so. No big deal. We're going to bring in another guy that can pass his life away and never give up possession.
It was, like you said, it was tough because it could have been with Verratti, Mata, and Ibrahimovic in there. It could have been a different game.
Oh, I think it would have been a much different game. And it's too bad because, I just don't think PSG can go back and correct this, especially with the form that Barca's in. But I would have loved to have seen them play with those three guys and Thiago Silva staying on. And the other problem with Thiago Silva walking off is, unfortunately, they brought on David Luiz for him. And that was just going to make the night go worse because Suarez just abused him. He just abused him. I mean, Messi hit the post here later on in the first half, and it really didn't look good for PSG. And then, you know, there was a little bit of foreshadowing when Suarez dispossessed Luis right before halftime. He wasn't able to capitalize on it, but it was just kind of a sign of things to come. And, you know, in the 67th minute, Suarez gets that. He did the village right there, and he started it with a mega Luis. I mean, he pushed another guy off. Looked like the guy was like a school kid trying to defend him. What a great goal, you know. Yeah. Almost a great save from the goalkeeper there, but what a great goal from Suarez. And at that point, 2-0, you could see things weren't going to go well for PSG. And let's talk about Suarez and his goal 12 minutes later. He picks up the ball, running right at Luis. I mean, Luis swung and missed at the ball, and he's megged him. And then he's curled that ball around Sirigu. It must be one of the best goals of the competition so far, Hanzo.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable finish. Put it right. I mean, he could have done a couple things and just decided to bend it right around it. Why not? I mean, and Suarez is later quoted to say, Megan Luis was the only place he could have gone there.
But he could say whatever.
But
yeah, yeah.
It was an unbelievable goal. It was kind of like a cap on the, and now you guys are out of the chance.
Right, and now it's done. And let's just, people are tearing into David Luis, but let's just be honest. First off, he wasn't really supposed to play. He's right. Had a hamstring. He's supposed to be out. He wasn't supposed to play. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt there, but I'm not going to give him the benefit of the doubt on he's never been a good defender. There was at no point has he been defending been his strong point. He played holding midfield at Chelsea. He was never going to play center back for them. I believe that Thiago Silva has insulated him in his time at PSG and covered for a lot of his defensive mistakes. He's an all or nothing defender. He just puts himself out there. He's flying into tackles, and Suarez abused him. It's that simple, and I'm not surprised it happened. It's very similar to what happened against Germany in the World Cup.
It was one of those where Barcelona were feeling it. They were already going forward. PSG did have a couple chances, you know, Javier Pastore and Cavani, but they just couldn't put it together. And I thought Cavani, you know, to cover for Ibrahimovic on that night just didn't do the job.
No, he wasn't good enough.
Confidence. He threw away some chances. He does that aerial volley when he could have just brought it down and done something a lot simpler and just kicks it away.
Yeah, I thought Cavani struggled. It looked like he was trying to push too much. He was trying to do too much, you know, and I just didn't think. I thought PSG, and I, there was a great quote that came from Laurent Blanc after the game. And he said, when you're a team that relies on keeping possession and you don't have much of it, you don't know how to play. And you could tell PSG didn't know how to play without the ball.
And then you can see David Luiz being wanting to get involved in that. Of course, he's starting to push up and get out of position and defend sloppily. And And that was the result. And especially it's Barcelona, you know, with those three. And so it's a tough call for them to get back, especially going back to Spain when Barcelona, all they have to do is keep the ball, which I think they'll be able to manage quite well. So unlucky for Paris Saint-Germain. I thought they, you know, without the couple of those injuries and suspensions, that they could have made a game out of this. And the other thing is they're vying for four trophies, or they were, dropping the Champions League. Now they just won the League Cup in France. They're still in a huge battle for the French League title. They've got the French Cup final. I mean, all that stuff adds up every single time, no matter the size of your roster or what. And you're kind of seeing the results of it.
It's a lot of games. It's a lot of games, and it's tough. And when you're doing it without your three best players, I mean, it was never going to be good. So there was a little own goal there in the 86th minute, Jeremy Mathieu off the foot of Vanderweil. But really, I mean, it's little consolation. I just don't think PSG can come back and do this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we've seen crazier things, which we can talk about here in a minute, but. Yeah, I don't see it either.
Right.
Unlucky for Mathieu.
Yeah, it is a little unlucky. Let's move on to the Porto Bayern, because this was just a real shocker. I don't think anybody could have really predicted that Bayern was going to go into the second leg down 3-1 to Porto. It's just a shocker. I didn't get to see the game live, but, you know, I went back and watched it, but when I saw the score, I thought there was something wrong with my phone. But when you look at, I mean, Dante himself put Porto up 2-0. In the third minute, Jackson Martinez strips him in the back. You know, I mean, Norris should have been sent off for that challenge.
Yeah, it's very, very lucky.
I mean, he should have been sent off, and this could be way worse than it is for Bayern. But he can, you know, they considered the penalty to Ricardo Quaresma there, but it wasn't even 7 minutes later when he did it again. And this one, I thought it was even worse. Dante's receiving the ball from the right side. He opens up with his left foot without checking where Quaresma is. He takes a first touch right into pressure. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's off to the races, and he's done him again. I mean, it's very difficult for me to understand this happening at this level for Dante. And you could see the look on Pep Guardiola's face. I thought he was going to blow his noodle. Yeah. I thought he was going to go Mandzukic.
it was a terrible night. Beckenbauer actually afterwards said, you know, I thought Dante still had skis on. But Xabi Alonso as well. And those are two, you know, big time veteran players. Xabi Alonso also had a nightmare.
Yeah, disaster.
So it's going to happen. It's one of those things. And, you know, they get their first loss ever in Portugal, and they've got work to do. Good, lucky for them, Alcantara has a goal.
Yes. Thiago Alcantara. I mean, we talked about him coming back into the fold and how big of a gain that is for Bayern Munich. But this one goal to me puts them in the mix, because I know that Bayern can win that game 2-0. They got the away goal, which is really, I mean, that's a huge goal for them. It really is a big goal. And, you know, at the time it put them 2-1. Of course, Jackson Martinez, and more just shocking defending in the second half from Bayern. And Jackson Martinez gets a goal. 3-1, but that goal right there, that away goal, I think puts Bayern in a position. I think it's going to be a great match, because what more do you want to see than going into a game at Bayern where they need two goals? They're going to be going right from the get-go. They're going to be flying at them, and I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there was a frustrated Lewandowski, a frustrated Müller, both working hard up there, but just not getting the chances, and Mario Götze was nowhere to be found. So it's kind of one of those things people need to come back and pick it up. Schweinsteiger was sick, so he's out. So he could be back as well.
Do you think Bayern was overconfident going into the game?
I think they probably overlooked it a little bit. I mean, they had some injuries. You know, you don't have Robin, you don't have Ribery, you don't have Schweinsteiger anytime you have that kind of thing. Philipp Lahm's just coming back. By the way, that's the first time they've lost this year with Philipp Lahm in the lineup, which is just insane.
That shows
you where they are at.
And yeah.
You think they could get through it? And I think you're right. They did overlook this game a little bit.
Yeah.
And it cost them big time.
Yeah, but, it did cost him, but I think
it's not the end of the world.
We'll see if they can get back. Now, another little piece of news is Pep Guardiola. Put a lot of blame on Bayern Munich's club doctor for the injuries and everything else. Hans Wilhelm Müller Wohlfahrt.
Yeah.
He actually has four names. They're all hyphenated. And three of his assistants have resigned. He's 72-year-old. He's been the German national team doctor. Pep Guardiola has put the blame on him. And he has resigned.
Yeah, I think he just...
He's taken his four hyphenated name and he's going elsewhere.
Well, I think it's one of those deals. Guardiola wants to maybe have his own crew, but this guy's been there for almost four decades. And he's also the German national team doctor. So it's a big loss. And it says something within the club that, I don't know, maybe there's a little discontent. I can't speak for anything. And who knows what the deal is. He doesn't publicly say it, but the doctors come out and said, I'm out of here. I won't be blamed for this kind of stuff. So,
well, and consequently, I'm looking at a picture of him here online. He looks like Meatloaf. So he might be resigning to go on tour with Meatloaf.
Yeah, I mean, he's done it before. He's done the resignation before when Klinsmann was in charge.
Yeah.
But he came back. So who knows?
Yeah, he'll be back.
You know.
He'll be back.
Yeah, it's tough to say.
I don't know about Guardiola blaming the doctor.
Yeah, I think that's...
I mean, come on, look at the first 10 minutes. Blame Dante.
Yeah, blames some of your players. Who knows the deal? Maybe it's just one of those deals that Guardiola, who told Alcantara you should go to Spain to get some work done instead when he was injured. So
right.
It could be one of those deals. He just wants his own crew.
Yeah, well, that's fair. You're listening to From the Touchline in Seattle. I'm Todd Stauber here with Aaron Hines, and we're on the Back Sports Page Radio Network and Blog Talk Radio. You guys can call in 760-283-0846. Not going to lie, though, the phone lines aren't burning up at this point. We do expect them to be burning up here, though, in just about 9 minutes as we welcome Colin Rigby in, former Seattle Sounder, coach of Jordan Morris. As a high school player, Jordan Morris, of course, just scoring for the U.S. in his first start for the U.S. in their 2-0 win over Mexico. Let's talk real quick about the USA-Mexico game. Kind of just a friendly, but there is no such thing as a friendly when we talk USA-Mexico. But a great opportunity for Jurgen Klinsmann to experiment a little bit with the lineup. You know, he had some injuries, had some guys that he wanted to take a look at. And hence we had Jordan Morris, young 20-year-old Stanford sophomore from Seattle, starting. And you had some other guys in the lineup that, that maybe you wouldn't have seen, normally. We did see Omar Gonzalez, come back into the fold at center back, with Ventura Alvarado. I thought both of those guys played very good. Greg Garza at left back, Breck Shea in the second half at left back. I thought they played very well. DeAndre Yedlin, Seattle boy, played right back. Not as great. I thought he got caught out of shape a few times, which is normal, as we've seen here 1,000 times in Seattle. But I thought that he played very well. He got better as the game went on. But overall, for a back, we've been talking about the back four for weeks, how they struggled. They struggled against Denmark. And I thought this back four looked very solid. And people are saying, oh, is Mexico's C team, whatever. It doesn't matter. I thought they looked good. I thought, especially the center back pairing of Gonzalez and Alvarado looked very good.
Yeah, it's exciting. And Klinsmann's always done well against Mexico.
Yeah,
he wins, three draws.
He's never lost.
Yeah, no, he's never lost. The U.S. is actually 13-5-5 since 2000 against Mexico. So they always kind of bring it.
It is, yeah.
He was a Mexico team that had just domestic players, no Chicharito, no Dos Santos.
Right.
But still, it was a good result.
It was a great
U.S. team that needed a result.
It was a great result. And, I think they played a diamond in midfield. I thought Mix Diskerud, he was on the right side of that diamond. I thought he was fantastic. Beckerman was his normal. I thought I always liked Beckerman and Bradley paired together. Beckerman was at the back of the diamond. Bradley was at the top. I thought it was good. Joe Corona was out on the left side of that diamond. And, the guy that I just keep liking, I saw him. He played well against the Sounders for LA Galaxy. But this is Zardes. I mean, yeah, Zardes looks good, man. I like him. If I'm Josie Altidore and I'm sitting my suspension for what I said to the referee, and I'm watching Jordan Morris and Zardes, and I know Clint Dempsey's there. I mean, I think that I probably need to play pretty well next time I put on the American shirt.
Yeah, he'll always get a chance. He's been scoring goals.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, I agree. I think Zardes is looking great, and he's getting a great experience and education from Robbie Keane in L.A.
Yeah,
I think
he sure
that's
is.
Been a huge deal for him. So it's showing, and he's doing really well for the United States. I'm excited about this kid coming up, and excited about Jordan Morris as well. Getting the goal, and then that's.
Well, and really, when you look at it, Juan Agudelo came on. It's his first game that he's played in quite some time for the U.S. He's come on. He's beat the guy there to the inside and finished. Of course, the field didn't help out much. I mean, the pitch was just shocking.
Yeah,
they laid the turf down in the dome in San Antonio. I mean, it was terrible.
Yeah,
my question is, how did it get so bad? It's in a dome. I mean, what happened to the turf? That it got so bad. It was terrible with the kickoff. I couldn't believe it.
Mexico was talking about it originally, saying this is pretty bad stuff. And they were definitely absolutely right. It looked awful. So I don't know.
It was shocking, but I mean, it went well for Juan Agudelo. It ended up good for him because the guy fell down and he was able to score. But let's just talk. You know, we're going to bring on Colin Rigby here to talk a little bit more about Jordan Morris. But Jordan Morris, Stanford sophomore, he's been getting called in. You know, he got his first call up here just a few months ago. This was his second appearance for the national team, his second cap, his first start. You know, he's a Seattle boy, grew up here on Mercer Island. He went through Eastside FC's club system, then went to the Seattle Sounders Academy there for his last year. I actually coached against him a couple years ago, and walking next to this kid, and I'm telling you, he's a kid, he's 20 years old. I mean, I thought I was walking next to an NFL linebacker. His shoulders are massive. He's a massive kid. Yeah. And I think in the game, he was a little naive on some of his movement, especially when we were in possession in our attacking half. Mm-hmm. But his movement when we were trying to get forward was good. And you could just see the athleticism of this player. And I mean, he's got real pace, Hunter.
Yeah, I think Klinsmann's definitely marked him as one of those kids he wants to bring up and can give him a lot of experience, especially the fact that Klinsmann was a world-class striker. And he's probably seen something in him that he really wants to work and bring up and encourage. You know, he gave him his debut in November against Ireland. He played against Switzerland as well. We saw him come in for that game, both road games. Now he's finally getting playing at home against Mexico, and he gets a goal. So he's got to be thrilled with it.
Well, yeah.
It's just a young start. It's not the Mexican first team. But
no, sure.
Still some great players in there. And
well, and I think – I think when you if you look at the goal itself, you know, it obviously took a fortunate deflection for him. But he takes his first touch perfectly, and as he finishes that, it's a great finish. I mean, there's no question, it's a great finish. Ooh, we got a caller. We got a couple callers in here. We're gonna take to the line here. We got a 360 on the call here. Hopefully, we want to talk Jordan Morris. We'll take a look here. You're on From the Touchline in Seattle with Todd Stauber and Aaron Hines. And what do you want to talk about here?
Well, I was wondering if you could tell me what your thoughts are on Man United doing well in the Champions League this year.
Yeah, I want to talk about Manchester United in the Champions League this year. Well, we're not going to talk about that because it's not happening. But we are going to talk about the Manchester Derby coming up here. Thanks for the call. We're gonna click off that call. We are still on Jordan Morris. It's good, though. We got people calling in, talking smack to us about Manchester United. I like that. I don't mind. We're going to bring Colin Rigby on right now. Colin Rigby, former Seattle Sounder USL player, coach at Mercer Island High School, was lucky enough to coach Jordan Morris as he was growing up on Mercer Island. Colin, are you there with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Big fan of the show.
Rigby, we're feeling really lucky to get you on. I know that you've been on a few media outlets here in Seattle over the past couple of days since the Jordan Morris hysteria hit the country. I know you've spoken to Jordan here in the past couple of days. What are his, what's going through his mind right now, and how is he feeling, and what's he thinking about what's going on?
Well, he's through the roof. He's super excited to be in the position that he's at. But at the same time, he's, I think, right now in economics class over at Stanford University. So busy guy. No, he's feeling great. I asked him a dumb question, you know, what did it feel like getting that goal? And obviously he just said it was a dream come true.
Yeah, well, it has to be. And, you know, we all watched him play here growing up. You got to see him from kind of a younger age as he grew up. And, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, as you're coaching young players, you always see things in players that kind of give you an idea that maybe they could be special. I mean, there had to have been something as a player, and also something within his character, just as a person, that you saw at a young age. You know, what did you see from him at a young age that just kind of let you know that this kid could be special? This guy could have something a little more.
Well, to go back to what you mentioned earlier in the show, he's physically already there. You know, he's a young guy, but he's the size of a house. And he's got, what I noticed most was he's got both quickness and pace. So he can beat a guy left, right, 1 or 2 yards. He can also beat a guy left, right, 10 or 20 yards. He can also beat a guy straight down the line, 100 yards. So there's very few people that have that gift of speed. But on top of it, he's got great footwork. He's got great awareness. You know, you can see in the goal that he scored against Mexico – just his awareness and his poaching ability to be able to be in the right place at the right time. You know, he got a lucky bounce, you could say a lucky bounce, but I think he read that the defender stepped up a bit early, took the space behind, and was able to get in behind him. So he's a quality guy.
Yeah, and this is you're listening to From the Touchline in Seattle. You got Aaron Heinzen and Todd Stauber here. We're talking to Colin Rigby live, former USL Seattle Sounder Colin Rigby, who was fortunate enough to coach Jordan Morris as a young high school player. Just talk a little bit about the character that Jordan possesses, just as a person and his upbringing, and how that plays into you know, the success that you're seeing out of him. And really, you know, listening to all the interviews after, just you can see he's just a humble kid who feels very fortunate to be in this position.
Yeah, you nailed it on the head. He's incredibly humble, incredibly polite. You know, he's gone through a lot in his life. He's got type 1 diabetes. He's got a tattoo on his forearm that kind of shows his support. And I think he's gotten some community outreach to other people who have gone through this same thing. And he's starting to become a role model for people who are in a position like he is, and able to show that you can fight through it. Insanely nice guy, always there to try to help and build on team chemistry and team morale. He's not very selfish, just as an individual, and he's just a quality guy. He's kind of guy that you want to see succeed, for sure, and easy to coach, incredibly easy to coach, because he wants to keep learning.
Colin, what do you think as far as Jordan's kind of his future? I mean, after this, he's obviously in the conversation in the Gold Cup this summer. Do you think we'll see a lot more of him, or do you think this is kind of one of those? I mean, he's been brought in obviously against Switzerland. He's been brought in here and scored a goal. I think we're going to be looking at a lot more Jordan Morris. Do you think this will affect any of his time at Stanford?
I don't know what the deal is with how much time it'll affect Stanford, but I'm pretty sure he would take any opportunity to come up if he gets called up. You know, when he went out, he went actually out to Europe to play for the U23s, and just after that first game that he played, in which he scored a goal and an assist, he got called straight over to Switzerland for that game. So there's some buzz around the U.S. team coaching staff, obviously liking the way that this guy plays, and I understand it for sure. You could see with the response from Jurgen Klinsmann when Jordan came off, the little hug, you know, you can see some things, little things like that actually stand out to me from a coach-player perspective. There's definitely a relationship that's being built with those two.
Yeah, I think you could see that. And, you know, you've seen Klinsmann's not afraid to bring young guys into the squad, as he did with Julian Green and DeAndre Yedlin this summer in the World Cup. And, you know, like you said, I think Klinsmann sees Morris as an upcoming guy, because, I mean, realistically, where's Clint Dempsey going to be in 4 years? He's going to be 36 years old. Is he really a guy that we can throw up top at 36? I don't know. I hope so, but I'm not sure. But I think, you know, looking to the future, Morris is definitely a guy that's going to be in the fold in the national team. But let's talk about this though, Rigby. You know, the headline, I'm reading a headline this morning on ESPN FC, should Morris leave Stanford? And, you know, there's been a lot of debate about that. Obviously the Seattle Sounders have his MLS rights, but he's at Stanford. He's talked about how much that education has worked to him. His dad obviously is a doctor back here in Seattle, the doctor for the Seattle Sounders FC. The education is very important to him and his family. Have you talked to Jordan about this, and where do you think he's at with the prospects of leaving Stanford? And if he did, do you think you would see him in Seattle, or do you think we'd see him go to Europe?
So I don't want to speak for him. This is a choice and a decision that he'll have to make down the road. But I think that so far, it shows a ton to his character to be able to turn down requests and offers to come play professionally already. He has had little stints over in England. He went over and trained with Fulham. He went over And, well, he's obviously been training on and off with Sounders here and there, but, you know, I think, you know, I spoke with him briefly about this, and, you know, when I first met him and I first started watching him play, and then when I started watching him play at high school, I knew he had it. I knew he had something special, and my first thought was, oh my gosh, you got to get going. You got to go to Europe right away. You got to go get the best development you can get. And sure enough, the next year he went to Sounders Academy and, you know, scored 25 goals in 25 games or something like that. So the development was there here in Seattle, which is a positive. And I kind of changed my tone towards him, saying, you know, Stanford is a good option for you. And I mean, all the decisions he's made have been on his own, and it's been rewarding to see a kid be put under that much scrutiny and still be able to come out with a conclusion that he feels is the right choice. I think he is devoted to Stanford. I wouldn't be surprised if he stuck around, but again, it depends what kind of offers are coming his way. If he does go, I think he is a Sounder through and through, and he will definitely have time with the Sounders. I don't know where the career will go from there, but you know how this pecking order goes here in the MLS, and when a team wants you, a team wants you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it should be interesting. I feel that he's going to stay. Just personally, I just have that feeling that he will. Why wouldn't he? I mean, he's getting everything that he could possibly want right now. He's getting called into the national team. He's scoring, and he's able to be in college, getting the best education you could possibly get in America, and at the same time playing for them. And my guess is, Rigby, he went back to Stanford this week after scoring that goal, and he probably didn't have a tough time getting a date on campus.
That's probably true, Sauber, but you never had trouble getting a date on campus either.
Well, I don't know how much time I actually spent on campus at SPU, so I don't know if I can speak to that. But this is Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen here on From the Touchline in Seattle. We've got former USL Seattle Sounder Colin Rigby on, talking Jordan Morris. And Colin, just really appreciate you coming on. You almost had Jordan himself on the air for us, which would have been fantastic. We're still hoping you can get him for us next week. But he is actually literally in economics class as we speak, and we couldn't get him on. And we sure do appreciate you coming on and you know, giving your insight about you know, your experience with Jordan and your relationship with him.
Yeah, my pleasure. Hey, keep on the good work you guys are doing. I really, really appreciate the Friday morning sessions you guys have. I'm excited to hear about that guy's request about Manchester United in the Champions League. And really excited to hear a little bit more about Gibby and FBI. And I just want last request is I need to hear a little bit more of the Samurai Sakuda. So a little bit more of that, and I'm all in.
Samurai Sakuda. Well, we are going to talk a little Sakuda, because we're going to talk about Montreal being in the Champions League, CONCACAF Champions League final. And Sakuda was actually a part of their 2009 meltdown when they gave up two game goals in stoppage time at Santa Laguna. So we will talk about that and we'll bring that on. So your request, we will take care of that. No problem. Colin Rigby,
well, thanks again,
Colin. Yeah. And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Rigby. Always great to hear from Colin.
Always great to hear insight. It was actually really good insight. I really enjoyed that. And you know, Riggs, he's been on. I think he was on King 5 yesterday. Yeah. Laying on the turf at Mercer Island High School. God, the things they made him do. But it's fantastic. Thanks again. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen here on From the Touchline in Seattle. We are on the Back Sports Page Radio Network and also on Blog Talk Radio. We are brought to you by nobody, because we don't have any sponsors, but we are going to give a little shout out to the girls down at Leverett serving us coffee every morning as we prepare for the show. We're going to move on. Well, actually, we're not really going to move on specifically. We're going to stay on task here a little bit. We are bringing Roger Levesque on here in about 5 minutes. Roger, a Stanford grad himself, former Seattle Sounder legend, of the scuba dive celebration. Classic. Yeah, it was classic, Roger. Going to bring him on here in about 6 minutes. We are going to ask him about Stanford and the education he received there. He graduated before he was, drafted into the MLS. But we're going to talk. We're going to talk about that and talk a little bit MLS with him. I just want to talk about a little bit about Jordan Morris here in this decision with Stanford, because, you know, we talked about a pre-show. I saw a comment on the bottom of the article about should he go, and some clown is saying, oh yeah, he's got $100,000 contract waiting for him. Yeah, that's great. But that guy doesn't have a Stanford education, clearly, because $100,000 is probably the minimum salary you would earn coming out of Stanford with a degree. Whatever he makes, it depends, but whatever Jordan Morris is going to make playing, okay, whatever he's going to make, let's say that he's going to make $1 million a year and he plays for 10 years, which would be a great career. Fair?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay,
great.
So he makes $10 million. Well, I'm pretty sure that in 40 years of work that he's going to have in front of him with a Stanford degree, I'm pretty sure his earning power is going to be above that $10 million with a Stanford degree.
Could be, yeah. It depends on what you go into. But I think you got to look at it as well. Instead of just money all the time, he's also got to think about the experience it would be to play in Europe or wherever it is he ends up.
True.
So I think that's thrown in there a bit, and you can always come back to Stanford. And
you can always come back.
But
I think it's
like Rigby mentioned, it's important that he weighs those things, and he's definitely doing it.
Right.
I think he's looking at education's first and the soccer thing, following his dreams. He's getting, like you said, he's getting to do it all the time. He's getting what he wants right now. He's playing for the U.S. national team. His name's growing. He's still getting a chance to get his education.
Yeah.
And now, for right now, I think he's very happy.
I think this isn't something that shouldn't be overlooked. And it's a little bit particular to our American culture, because obviously in Europe, he would already be a pro. He would already be playing somewhere. But the college experience in the United States is pretty fantastic. I mean, going to college is fantastic. And
absolutely.
I mean, for me, I was trying to stay as long as I could. I wasn't looking to get out early. I was thinking, maybe I could fail another class and have to come back next quarter, So, I joke about him coming back to Stanford, not having to struggle to get a date after that experience, but what an experience it must be going to Stanford and experiencing that education and that culture and that campus. I think it's fantastic. I think it'll be interesting to see, we're going to hear from Roger Levesque here in a few minutes about that. But, I think it's going to be interesting to see what Jordan Morris does. I know that Jurgen Klinsmann desperately wants him to pass up the MLS and go straight to Europe to play. I think if you're Jordan Morris, maybe you're looking at DeAndre Yedlin saying, look, yeah, he's gone to Europe. It's taken him 3 months just to get in the 18.
Yeah.
I think he's going to want to play right away. But the other thing you're looking at there, are you going to come to Seattle and play over Obafemi Martins and Clint Dempsey? No, you're not going to. Yeah. So it might be in his best interest to stay where he's at right now. He's playing with the 23s. They're in a cycle where they're qualifying for the Olympics right now. So he's getting a ton of games with them. He's obviously getting pulled into the national team. I think for me, if I'm him, I stay where I'm at. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I totally agree with you. I think he has the best of everything on all the options that he could possibly want right now. So it's a good time for him. And the fact that he's getting a goal and having success there, it means it's not really going to be just a one-off where they give him a shot. He gets one or two games and they're like, okay, you're not ready yet. Thanks very much. He's right in the talk, and he's looking at playing in the Gold Cup this summer, I think.
Yeah, I think he's
that's a real great introduction into your international team, and obviously the United States has a really good possibility of playing all the way to the final and playing Mexico in the final, except for the fact that you also think about Costa Rica, but they're up there, they're in the top three.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they will. I think seeing how this progresses is going to be interesting, because even look at Juan Agudelo. Juan Agudelo was the biggest rising star in American soccer 4 years ago. He went to Stoke City and vanished.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he vanished worse than Jozy Altidore did.
Yeah.
And didn't get a game, ended up on loan in Holland, didn't do much there. Now he's come back to the New England Revolution. Now it's like he's starting his career over again, right? Which I just don't want to see that for Jordan Morris. I want to make sure, I want to make sure that and I think he will be very smart about the decisions that he makes and where he goes from here. Because for him, he doesn't have to go to Europe and get in there right away. He doesn't have to. He can. It's an option. but he doesn't have to.
Right. It's just good to see, excuse me, it's good to see some kids, you know, making, some kids want to go and go pro, and that's the best thing for them and for him. He wants to get the education, and it's good to see. It's kind of a change. I mean, it's obviously, soccer is different here in the United States. It's not the NBA. It's not the NFL. You're not going to go make millions straight off the bat. So why risk getting injured and somehow losing that opportunity? So
yeah.
I think for him, it's the right move. Obviously, it's his decision. It'll be talk between him, the Stanford coach, Klinsmann, the Sounder. So
yeah,
lots of people in the mix, but it's exciting for him and good opportunities. And I think, like was said earlier, if somebody does come knocking that's too big an opportunity to turn down, I think you might see it maybe change his mind.
If Bayern Munich.
Exactly. Something like that. But I mean, that's a
Real Madrid. Manchester United. Yeah, I don't know about that. Well, one more thing I want to mention on the USA-Mexico game just before we bring Roger Levesque on here. I thought Bradley, Michael Bradley, was the best that I've seen him since before the World Cup. I thought he struggled during the World Cup. I didn't think he played at his highest level. And I think he struggled in every game we played since the World Cup. But he was fantastic against Mexico. He covered a ton of ground. And it was really I thought it was fantastic to see that again. So,
yeah, Bradley, yeah, he's the biggest, most experienced there, you know, just playing underneath the forwards. And, yeah, he's going to be the man that they're going to be turning to, obviously, for the next several years. So he's got the most experience on the whole team. So,
yeah,
absolutely.
Well, we are ready for Roger Levesque here. We got Roger Levesque here on the line, Seattle Sounder legend, current director of community outreach for the Seattle Sounders FC. Roger, are you with us?
Todd, Aaron, it's a pleasure to be on the air with you.
Oh, it is more of a pleasure to have you on the air. We just had Colin Rigby on. I don't know if you heard any of that, but Riggs made a little appearance, and it was fantastic. Roger Levesque here, folks, on from the Touchline in Seattle. Initially drafted by San Jose out of Stanford in 2003, Roger, you ended up on loan in Seattle with the USL, and it started a love affair that you have with the city of Seattle. You know, it just obviously. You had 144 appearances for the USL Sounders, 34 goals. You won titles in 2005 and 2007, went with them into the MLS, 53 appearances, 6 goals for the MLS Sounders. Now you're working with them as a director of community outreach. Tell us a little bit, tell the listeners a little bit what it's like, this love affair that you have with this city and just the opportunity to do what you're doing here in Seattle with the Sounders.
And gosh, listening to that sounds like I've been around for a long time. I don't feel that old. I think it comes down to the group of guys and the organization, the people that were in the organization when I first came to Seattle. That's what I initially fell in love with. Made it really easy to continue to come back each summer and play for the USL team, you know, and that's continued on through my time with the MLS team and even now with the organization. I think even more so, the ability to be able to, you know, connect not only with the soccer community, but the community in general, and, you know, meet some great people and try and have some impact along the way. So that's where I find myself now, back working with the Sounders organization. So
yeah, well, I mean, obviously, Right when you got done your last game against Chelsea there, great send off for you at CenturyLink Field, but got into your MBA program there at UW, finished that. You smashed right through that, by the way, and finished that. Got the job, and I think, you know, just from me having known you for a while, I mean, what a perfect job for you, because I think that, you know, there's always a lot of players that, you know, they're involved with the community here and there. And, you know, it's kind of something that the team wants you to do. But it's always been something very genuine from you, a genuine desire to be involved in the community, to do outreach things. And you can always see in you is something that you enjoyed. I mean, you're always the last one out signing autographs. You're, you know, the first one to stop and talk to fans. I mean, even now when we go out in Seattle with you, I mean, it's it's amazing at how many people want to come and talk to you, and you give every single person the same amount of time as you would give your best friends.
Yeah, and I think it's easy within the soccer community and in Seattle as well. I think it's the community is very focused on giving back and philanthropic efforts, you know, and being part of the Sounders, using the energy and the support and the passion that, you know, you see in the stadium week in and week out, and redirecting that into community efforts. that's kind of the goal, and it's an easy conversation to have and to start with people.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Raj, Aaron here.
Aaron.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Good. Hey, I wanted to ask you a question about kind of if you had some advice. You know, we were just talking about Jordan Morris and his situation, and you know, being a former Stanford player yourself and making the jump to the pros. Do you have any advice for him at this stage in his career?
You know, I think I think my view has changed over the years as far as education and, you know, more on the timing side. You know, I still think education is the utmost importance, you know, for someone, looking to play the professional game, whether that you get your education, you know, and continue to grow and develop as a player, or, you know, maybe it's later on. Having been to Stanford, education was at that time, I wanted to finish school. And, you know, I think that was the right path for me in terms of my development. You know, I think Jordan may be in a very unique situation, having the opportunities that he's had and kind of garnering the success that he has. You know, Wednesday, bringing up a whole new set of questions for him. You know, and I know education, his father, his family really well, and education is very important. And I don't think that's an issue for him. At some point, he will have something to fall back on. You know, I think in terms of how I view it now, the timing of education is what is sort of, I think, when I was in school and when I was in undergrad, I didn't really know what I wanted to do outside of play soccer and, sort of the social aspect of college.
Not many people do anyways.
Right. Yeah. And so, having gone back to school in the second round in the MBA program, you know, had a lot better idea of, you know, what I wanted to get out of it, you know, where I wanted to end up at the end. And I think it was a lot more valuable of an experience for me. And so, you know, whether Jordan stays at Stanford another year and continues on with his education, or, you know, whether he, you know, puts himself in a situation to, you know, to really develop even more so, you know, to play at the highest level at this age. You know, I think either path can be successful. I think at this point, I would, if I had, it was in his shoes, I would think a little bit more openly about putting off education until a later date, till I knew exactly what I wanted to use it for.
That's great insight, Roger. You're listening to From the Touchline in Seattle here with Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen. We've got Seattle Sounder legend Roger Lebeck on the line here. He's talking Jordan Morris. He's talking Stanford. He's talking education. And, you know, Roger, I think I think from a guy who did choose to finish his degree before he went pro, as you did, it's great insight for you to take a look at this and you know, talk to us just a little bit about what, you know, Jordan Morris is looking at Stanford. Obviously, the Stanford education is worth a lot. But, you know, I think what you're saying is, you know, he's in a very unique situation where he's scoring goals at age 20 for the U.S. national team. He's going to have maybe some pretty fantastic opportunities ahead of him on the field here in the next, you know, in the next year. He's got 2 years left there, though. And, you know, I think that's I think you see a lot of American football players graduating early so they can start their pro career a little earlier. How hard would that be? You know, at Stanford, it's not like, hey, I'm going to double up on my credit. It's going to be really easy here to double up and finish. What do you think the chances of something like that, you know, maybe Jordan accelerating his schooling there so he can get out of there and get onto his pro career?
Yeah, I mean, I think could be opportunity for it. You know, I think it would be difficult, especially if he continues to play, you know, with the national team, continues to get those opportunities. And I think the opportunity to get a Stanford education won't go away by any means if he decides to step away. I mean, he's a bright kid with a bright future, and at this point, it depends on how much time he's been playing soccer, hanging out with his girlfriend, and going to class. That I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we were talking to Rigby about the fact that we're guessing when he returned to campus on Thursday morning to go to class, it probably wasn't going to be too difficult for him to garner up a date for the weekend after that performance on Wednesday.
Yeah, no, that is for certain. You know, I think he has a lot to think about, and he's still, you know, as a 19-year-old, you know, maybe has different priorities, and I don't think there's, you know, a bad path for him. I think, yeah, you know, he'll continue to develop regardless, and you know, if he does decide to you know, try his hat in the professional game, I think it'll be it'll come from a well thought out place from his side of things.
Yeah. Yeah, again, you're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Hines in here on From the Touchline in Seattle. We're on the Back Sports Page Radio Network and Blog Talk Radio. We got Seattle Sounder legend Roger Lebeck on here. Roger, named number 19 in the USL Top 25 of the decade in 2010. A great USL and MLS career here with the Sounders. You made the transition to the MLS in 2009. Now working with the Sounders in 2015, you look around the league. How has the league changed, and how has the league evolved in your eyes, just seeing what you see in terms of the popularity, facilities, et cetera, those types of things in the league?
Right. I mean, I think that the growth over those years has been really consistent. You know, I think, and that's been the case, you know, since day one, you know, back in 95, 96, you know, whenever the MLS first, you know, first found its roots. You know, I think the process has been slower than initially expected, you know, on a lot of different fronts. But the consistency is something that the consistent improvement is something that, you know, through my years of being in and around the soccer community and seeing it grow as far as the MLS. You know, I think this year in particular, you know, the success of new franchises, Orlando, NYCFC coming in, and the buzz that were surrounding those teams and the support, you know, from the organization to bring in world-class players, you know, is, you know, shows that momentum and sort of the direction that the league is headed. You know, I think the connection, you know, this year with the sort of the USL franchises and having a, you know, somewhat of a second division and seeing the level, you know, going down to Starfire last weekend and watching S2 play Portland Timbers second team, and the level, you know, was, you know, watching these, you know, young players who are technically way better, you know, than, you know, I could even imagine when I was that age, and seeing the development and the opportunity for those young players to, you know, to get a sniff and get a look in the first team and at the highest level. Yeah. That competition that's created in that sort of in that system, you know, is going to pay dividends going forward. And then the last thing that I see, kind of looking at the development of the academy system, so youth development. You know, U.S. Soccer has
right.
taken a long, hard look at the academy system and trying to find ways to develop players and continue to make it better. You know, here at Seattle, probably one of the, you know, better systems to be a part of in the country. You know, looking at what Garth Lagerwey has come in and done, you know, sort of integrating the system from, you know, when the Sounders first get a hold of players through the academy system into the USL and into the first team, and that consistency of training in a professional environment, you know, and we've seen it with, you know, all the kind of the homegrown players, the products that, you know, have come out of here. You see, you know, the success of DeAndre and watching him step on the field for Tottenham this past weekend. Aaron Kovar, you know, other guys coming out of our academy system. And so that's going to, you know, I see the Sounders as a front runner in that, but I don't think it's going to be too long before other academy, other youth systems start to catch up and do that same thing. And it's only going to continue to make the, you know, the league better.
Yeah, definitely. You look at Victor Monterrey as well, who's got in the last two Sounder games another academy product, just 18 years old there, so another one. But we're listening to From the Touchline in Seattle here with Todd Stauber and Aaron Hines. And just want to, you know, we've had Roger Lebeck, Seattle Sounder legend, on here. Just want to thank you for your insight, Roger. Great to have you on the show. Best of luck with all of the community outreach that you're doing. And I'm sure Hines and I are going to see you here real soon.
Yeah, I will look forward to that. Todd, Aaron, thank you, fellas. You guys are great.
Thanks, Roger. Take care. Just great to have Roger on, and Colin Rigby. Thank you to both of our guests. This show just flew by. We didn't even get to the Manchester Derby, Manchester United, Chelsea. We didn't even get to any of the MLS games, but
it's gonna be 2-0 United against Chelsea.
2-0 United. Heinzen says. I'm saying 2-1 United. What a show it was. I don't think anything's ever gone by that quickly.
Wonderful.
But thanks again to Colin Rigby, Roger Levesque, our guests in on the show. We'll be back on the air next week. We're going to be a little later next week, not 9 a.m. We're going to be going at noon Pacific Standard Time next week. Thanks for listening in from the Touchline in Seattle. Check us out on Twitter @FTTL in Seattle. We'll talk to you next week.